Okay, in Parshas Chukas, there's obviously a lot of discussion about the concept of a chok, as one would expect, and many Rishonim say similar things, overlapping things, different things. The first few pieces deal with that, and the first one is a Rabbeinu Bechaya. Chukas HaTorah says the Mefarshim and Farshim Lashon Choyku Gzeres HaMelech. It's sort of a diktat of the king. Something that people don't understand, and they really are perplexed by it, like a paraduma, which is mitad atoyam mitam es atahor. The emes, he says, ki a paraduma is of those folks. In other words, it's true that a paraduma is part of those mitzvahs that we don't understand, but that's not what the main lashon of chok is. Chok is not something that we don't understand, and we do not understand a chok, but it means something else. Avol ikar lashon chuka milashon chakika yirmoiz ledova hachokuk umetsuya lamaila vanirmoz yisol paraduma v'lchei nikra chelek echod min amitzes chukim. So Rabbeinu Bechaya gives us a definition of what chok is, which is very much rooted in the world of the way Kabbalah understands something. The, for instance, let's give a simple example. If the objects that exist in my frame of reference in the place that I live are real objects. So I have the cow, and I have sheep, and I have houses and roads and rocks, etc. Let's say somebody brings me a picture of a kangaroo. So I look around. There's nothing in Maryland that looks like a kangaroo. There are no kangaroos. So is it real or is it not real? That picture, what is it? So it is not real in where it's at. In other words, it's not part of my reality, but it is a true representation of a reality somewhere else. So of the class of the classes of objects that we possess, we can label class A are objects that fully exist within our metzias, and B, things that are representation of objects that don't exist in our frame of reference. So, chok refers to things who, in their own right, are not part of our reality. So, lamashal, the mitzvah of tzedakah or the iser of geneva is part of our reality. It's tov and ra defines itself well within that reality, and it's therefore something which we can sense. It's tov and ra because it's part of our metzias. Chok is something that, and paraduma is something that it's a picture of something that is a higher, it's a reality someplace else, but not within our world. So we are absorbing truths when we deal with it, but it's not a truth of the reality around us. That is the concept of chok, the way he explains it. Now, the truth is, the Mekubalim went a step further, and they saw the entire Bria, with all the mitzvahs, as being all types of chukim that one would say over here. They all represent things that are much more abstract and much more quote unquote true reality, but that don't have existence in our world, and all we're doing is simply alluding to it. There is a medrash, that tantalizingly close medrash. The medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, "Ani b'masai ve'ata b'samimonecha. I will do the things, and you paint them with your paints." In other words, when we make, for instance, a Mishkan, the things that we put into the Mishkan are representative elements of a higher world and a higher reality, and that's how we relate to it. And in a sense, the Kabbalah does that as well. Yes?
Rebbe, if it's a higher reality that we can't understand, how does the representation help us relate to it at all?
Okay. So the answer is, at least we get a sense of it. For instance, let's take an example. With a kangaroo, we certainly can get a sense of a kangaroo watching him in a movie, let's say, whatever it is. But let's take something else. Let's say a blind man reads books using Braille, or somebody reads him books, and he reads a lot about light. He'll never, as long as he's blind, he'll never know really what light is, but he can use it, he can learn to use it expressively in a way that is almost an intuitive sense of it. And we'll see later that Akedah speaks about this type of inyan, where one can gain, he says later, that Olam Haba is something we can't ever have full-on knowledge as world, but we can have an intuitive sense of it. So it's something which we are better off knowing about it, but never quite to think that we have the thing itself. Now, he says another reason. The Oidnikram Chukim, so he says there's Chuk Sator, the Sar Mishtaleach, and Paraduma, and Klayim. The Oidnikram Chukim Miloshen Gvul. The word Chok is in the Loshen of a Gvul, a boundary. Ke'inye Shekosov Asher Samti Chol Gvul Ayam. I've put down sand as a boundary to the Yam. Chok Olam V'lo Yavrenu. It is a perpetual statute. Never crosses over it, or it says Chukos Rechachov or Laila Kloma Gvul Ayom VaLaila. V'zele Horos Shenatzor Amachshavim LaHar Behem Lo Navor Gvul Mipnei Omer Katzegosam. What it means is this is the boundary and limitation of human understanding. Let's talk a little about this in two levels. First of all. In the common denominator of secular, let's call it philosophy, or let's philosophy of the secular versus religion, there's an overlapping area, and that is Seichel and Das. Seichel and Das is used by the secular to understand the world around him and to come to conclusions about the world around him and what's right and what's wrong, etc. And a Torah person is supposed to use his seichel a lot. He's supposed to study Torah, understand it, and basically the top of the mountaintop is the person who sits and learns and is constantly understanding deeper and deeper. So one asks, well, what is the difference between the two? So we accept, we feel that, you know, there was a revelation, etc. But what inherently is the real nafgemina? And the answer is as follows: the secular philosophy, in its Weltanschauung, takes on. That the human brain is capable of understanding everything, to some degree at least. We may not be able to do phenomenal calculations, but there's nothing, the mind balks at the idea of there being something that our mind cannot understand. I remember as a young boy, whenever I was told it's something that you won't understand to grow up, it would make me very, very upset. I didn't believe that was true. It's the same brain, just a little bigger. I might be able to do calculations quicker, I might be able to add up larger columns and numbers. What does it mean you won't understand it until you grow up? It would get me very, very annoyed. The secular attitude is, the human mind is capable of understanding everything. That which the human mind takes as being absurd is absurd, period. And that's all there is to it. And the truth be said, even if a person were to accept the human mind might have limitations, but what's the alternative? Is the witch doctor better? The shaman is a better? Is that any better? I mean, what's he basing it on? The understanding of the religious person is that if the seichel is a bria, then it must have boundaries, and those boundaries are going to limit the things that seichel can describe, absurd, or possible, or exists. That very primary categorization that the mind makes is a good categorization, provided we understand the mind comes with a built-in limitation. It's a piece of flesh. It has an operating system that is, 3.0, 5.0, 100.0. It's limited, and therefore, we're going to accept that the mind is a very significant part of understanding wisdom, but it's not the ultimate arbiter, and a true revelation can be the only ultimate arbiter of right and wrong and true and false, etc. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a series of mitzvahs that are beyond the mind, because part of it, Rabbi Nachman says, is to bring home the idea that this belongs to the other side of the gevul. This belongs to the other side of that boundary, and it keeps reinforcing in our mind the boundaries, the limits of the human mind. That's a very, very important piece of Emes, is to understand there is a boundary up to where we understand, past that we don't understand. That's the point Rabbi Chaim makes. There's a second point here that I would like to point out. The phenomena, the vast majority of the phenomena that we're familiar with are a continuum. It's hot, hotter, very hot, extremely hot, terribly hot, excruciatingly hot. We don't, any boundaries we make to say that if it's 79 degrees in the room, it's not uncomfortable. If it's 80 degrees, it is uncomfortable, is very, very, it's kind of nitpicking. I mean, sometimes you got to do it, you just set the thermostat. But it's meaningless. There's a very famous paradox, logical paradox, that's built on this, on not recognizing this issue. For instance, they pose the following question. A person who is absolutely cleanly shaven, and he has one hair on his head, is that a beard? And the vast majority of people will answer no. Okay, what if he has two hairs, and he's not a paraduma? Does he have a beard or not? And most people will say no. So finally, at some point the person will get tired and they'll say, yes, he has a beard, now he has a beard. So say, okay, fine, can I quote you that the 173rd hair is the beard? And then you get very frustrated and annoyed and you say no and yes and whatever. The way out of this paradox is as follows. If a beard was a metzias, then it would be either yes or no. A beard is really an adjective. It means someone whose face is hairy. That's what it means. So, one hair is, he is a incy-bincy-bincy little bit bearded. And two is a bitsy-bitsy more, and so on and so forth. There is no, if a beard were to have like a federal regulation, like let's say the federal government would have the Democrats long enough in the power, and we'd have federal regulations for beards. So then we could probably come up with a statute, mind the word statute again, for beards. 1,943 hairs is a beard. And a deluxe beard might have a few more hairs. But that's a definition that we find. Most things in the world range more and a little bit more and so on. One of the one of the surprises of quantum physics was that things don't radiate, energy does not radiate in a continuum, it actually comes in discrete packets, which seemed very counterintuitive. We all have experienced, not like that, there are things that are hotter, there's, you can have an infinite amount of degrees on coming out of a heater. That's, but be it as it may, any time there's a gvul, the Gemara, the Mishnah says that, you know, that din is something that says, you know, exact amounts. Memsa chosa achas is going to be tamei. Memsa is absolutely tahor. One is 100% tamei, 100% tahor. The concept of gvul is a concept that is artificial. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a boundary into the world. For instance, I'll take an example. Let's say you have people invited in a court, in a yard, for some sort of celebration. There will be a scattering, a fairly even scattering of people over the yard. If there's a house, they'll all be in the house, and those walls are the gvul. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu in some places made gvulos, which almost now mind artificially contain that which is in it. So when you have sand on a beach and the water never seems to rise above the sand functions, appears to us to function as a gvul. Chok, he says, the fact that our mind can understand many things well, and some things a little more, some things a little less, and some things even less, and so on, that seems... But then there's just the boundary where there is no understanding. This is the world where 2 and 2 equals 5. And that is something that is a gvul. But the concept of gvul, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a gvul is something that's alien and artificial to the creation. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to put gvulas in creation. Because it's sort of, there's a sort of artificiality to it. He then finishes off with the difference in chok and chokka, he says. We'll touch briefly on it, it's a Kabbalah issue. He says, you find sometimes in the pasuk it says chok and sometimes chukka, with a hey. There are words like that in Lashon Kodesh, laila and laila, it can have that, and so on. But he says, kamitzvah nikas chok in yishav midas zohar. He says there's two midas zohar and shamar. One is the I'm adding, one refers more to mitzvah essay, one to the los essay. Zohar is the positive element, and shamar is the element not doing. And therefore he says, on Korban Pesach it says, l'choikho v'necha, and b'chaz mili you say choik, and Rosh Hashanah you say choik v'yisrohu. So, v'amitzvah nikas chukah nimshach v'midas shamar. So you have zohar and shamar, two midas. One is the root of essays, one is the los essays. One is Zohar, one is the Keva, and that would be Chukos HaTishmoru, and which is talking about the Isad Kalayim, HS Ach, and Vishamata is focused on Yomida. Wherever you have the word of Vishamata, the concept of Shemira, you would have it in Lashon HaKeva. This is in line with the general sense of things that the Midas, that essays are played in Zohar. Maybe we'll see some of the Pashis when we get the Ramban. And a keva is something which is totally in the losses are a meat of the keva, whatever he points this out. Okay, we have the next piece in the Akeda, and this deals with people trying to understand Torah in different ways. And he makes here a division into three groups. This division is pretty much across the board. In Chazal, you find Chazal in Rishonim, the Rambam in his Akdamot HaChelek uses this type of division. The Maral uses it in his ways. It doesn't always line up as three, but this is there. Devin Ezuint in the beginning of his Akdamot will Amr Chazal. Adir Chachama Mati Echkim Avir Chaykim Imenis of Paraduma. He says when you really understand what Chazal meant in this pasuk of Echkim Avir Chaykim Imenis. Will have pshat in this whole parash over here. He says, "V'zeh shaboyim l'stoyfev b'divrei Torah lokis nechgu shalosh kitos." There are three groups of people in their approach to Torah. Ha'echad, the first one, Hakat Ha'amonis HaMekabel, is called Dovah Kiksovam. People, lower, Hamon, are the public in its more pejorative sense. Mob, the masses. They accept everything literally. HaMekabel is called Dovah Kiksovam. They understand all of Torah being literal. When they figure, Kimaima v'yisatzev aliboy, v'yorech Hashem, v'yichaf Hashem, Edom v'yareved Hashem in Sinai, all of them have to be literal. If the Torah says so, Torah says so. These are literalists without any discrimination whatsoever. V'asheni, the second group, akat bale chakira v'vim kol v'ram e'lo v'adomim al mitzarev ha'secho, mitzarev ha'secho v'mechkar. They are people that think about things and pass everything through the seichel. Omnom, he says, that group itself divides into two. Mehem, they're willing to accept anything that logic has pointed as long as it doesn't contradict the Torah. And they will explain the Torah in a way that is consistent. Using something like the idea of the Torah uses a metaphor for many things. So all these descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayicha Af Hashem, Erdon Naver, and so on, are metaphors because that is, we know that that's one of the ways the Torah was given. Omnom, he says, Bechol Ma'ashem Mishpat HaSichli Negative HaTorah, that when the seichel is against the Torah, hinehem yireim lenafshem, they're scared. Vehein lo yaminu lo yishma kolo, they will not listen to seichel. Al yekaimu divrei Torah veyomru kekotzar seichel mesgin yehu, they will uphold the Torah and say we just don't understand it, like the Rambam Mor Nevuchim says in several places. Omnom, he says, yeshem azi panim, there are some mechutzafim shemivatn divrei Isaiah Yunus, they're mevatl Torah because of what they came up in reasoning, like the secular philosophers, the Goyim, and unfortunately some of the Jews. I want to talk about a few of these points here. He says something that is remarkable and consistent, I guess, with Rabbeinu Bechai in that sense. On the one hand, if Seichel is coming up with a result that can fit Torah, then you should accept it. Seichel is an appropriate tool. It's only when Seichel comes up with something against Torah, then we have a problem. Now, let's explain it. It sounds to us, quote-unquote, ridiculous. Even though we said before there's boundaries what Seichel understands doesn't understand, but we somehow have an issue with it. I want to point out something that we normally do and is something that we also do it that way. A good scientist plays on is doing two things at the same time. He's collecting data and he's formulating theories. Now, when you formulate a theory, you build it around the data, but it also requires seichel in terms of formulating it, in terms of figuring out what's the important point. For instance, if a person was doing research on cancer, he would do smoking as a filter, he would do, let's say, obesity, etc. But there's no researcher playing with a full deck of cards that would try to figure out if people with the name Max are more prone for cancer than people with the name Eugene. Even though, as a scientist, theoretically, he's blind. But let's say the evidence comes in, and it is like that. And he keeps trying everything. And maybe Maxes are named for people that are maybe like heavyset people are named Max. And that's the problem. But let's say he eliminates all stuff, and he's stuck with that. At some point, he's going to be forced by the data to say, I don't get it. Strange, but that's what it is. Much of many elements of physics were at the beginning, everything was extremely logical, and as we started going down further and further in terms of the size of the world, it started becoming baffling, puzzling, a lot of things, and things that are just don't make sense to the mind, but we have no choice, and we accept because it is. In other words, the Baal Torah understands that Seichel is the first tool you use, but the data is what it says in the Torah. So there's always a sort of struggle between the two, between the Seichel and the Torah, and we always have to we acknowledge the Torah. Yes.
So Rebbe, where do you draw the line with that? In other words, why do you say that we're not going to understand that literally? I'm going to use my Seichel to understand
right.
it differently. Why can't using the example of the physicist? Why can't he say, well, it doesn't make sense to me, but I'll come up with some way of explaining this a way so that it doesn't violate what I would
okay.
think.
So Vayichar Af is an easier one, because that's an internal inconsistency with understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah makes it clear that God is not corporeal. It says it 1,000 times. So the Torah itself demands we interpret Vayichar Af differently. The problem will start, let's give a pasuk. It says that Hashem Hashemitze Michupasai. Now, the psukim do seem to imply that the sun rises and sets. That's the thrust of the normal psukim. Now, one can say we know scientifically that's not so, and therefore the psukim are a metaphor. Or we could say science doesn't have to think this is like a paraduma. We need to tuck our seichel away and say this is what the Torah said. The question is, in that tug of war, for instance, let's take another one. The Avenezer says that the only type of words in Torah that you're allowed to interpret as a metaphor is something like Orlas Halev, because the heart doesn't have an Orla to it, and it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Maltim Asaros Levavchem, that someday HaKadosh Baruch Hu will cut off the Oros Halev. There's nothing in the heart that will really be cut off, but rather Kadosh Baruch Hu will take away the Yitzhahara. That's because Seichel said there's no such thing called Oros Halev, and it's going to mean that. Maybe, why didn't we decide instead to say, well, this is part of where the Torah knows better than us. We have yet to find a part of the heart that's bad and it's hardic, but as long as Mashiach will be able to precisely pinpoint the knife and zap out all bad. And why didn't we say it that way? I don't know. I mean, Seichel, again, Seichel says, no, that pasuk is a metaphor, and it's Pasha, it's a metaphor, and so on. But if someone were to press me hard, if somebody didn't share that sensitivity of thinking that this is a metaphor and this is a thing, I'd be hard really to find some objective criteria. So basically, real defining of things by Torah is always tricky, because when we don't know, how do we do it? Do we redefine it, or do we just say, well, the Torah knows better? We can sometimes just doesn't seem to be able to redefine it that fast. But killing a Moloch is killing a Moloch, and therefore we at that point we say we have no understanding. Paraduma fits that category. Paraduma seems to be counterintuitive by all counts. How is it that the same thing can make Tomei Tohar, and you know, the same act defiles one person, makes somebody holy? So fine, we can. That really, really seems to be an extraordinary pasuk. But many other psukim, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. So he says the first one is, if somebody learns b'shitchias, he's a pesiyamim choldava. In other words, if a person doesn't use any discriminatory power, and this is, I guess, in a certain sense, in a broader sense, the difference between the justification for learning iyun, as opposed to just absorbing the material. Absorbing material without some filter, without some sense of what's right, what's metaphor, and so on, is lacking Torah. So Pesiz Yam Choldava means, it's a quote of pasuk here. It says Midarkov Yispas Suglev Uma'alov Ishtov. Hesi amal chol dov v'nov yov l'ashuroi, chochem yori v'sar, meira uksul mitzavoteach. So he explains here each of these midas suglei with somebody who doesn't really discriminate and doesn't understand well. That's one end of it. So suglei falls into the trap of pesi amal chol dov, simply believes everything and doesn't in any sense discriminate anything. Kiamaminim and the thing that he feels is pesi amal chol dov for sure. He says, "Ki'amaminim b'dvar mefursumei habitul ke'elu binyanei loikus." Some believe God can have a nose, and God can have this, and God can have that. He named ki'amamin sheish b'betnat fadeh agavor v'tolu. As if somebody believes that in the stomach of a frog, they have a huge mouth. In other words, it's impossible at all accounts. However, al klal hakate yuni amar b'noven yovan ashuro, that a wise man will understand it, but he shows in this pasuk both the people that use their mind and step back when they're overwhelmed by when the Torah says not like that, as opposed to people just use the iyun ayuni, and he says valakata shekinegda meiza umeiza ama uksil misabu b'teach, a fool is arrogant and is self-confident. So he's telling us these three things. You have the people that swallow everything, hook, line, and sinker, always non-discriminatory. These are fools and ma'avis Torah. You have the people who trust their minds. Anything that in Torah doesn't fit in, they dump. Those are also fools in a different sense. It's a person who uses seichel, but double checks against the Torah. That the Torah said it's it's like when you do the problems in a math book, and then you look at the answer section, and the answer section doesn't agree with you. You say to yourself, I don't know how they got it. I thought I had it right, but I guess it's back to the drawing board again. So those are the different approaches to Chachmas HaTorah in general, and therefore he elaborates. There's a piece later on about where Seichel comes in and so on.
Well, yes. I mean, Rebbe, maybe it's opening a can of worms, but with the Maisa Bereishis, whether we're going to understand that as a muscle or literally, how does that, when one that's side can say the other side is being a petsy, and the other side can
correct.
Say you're not being mommy.
And not only can they say it, but they actually, in fact, say it.
How are you talking?
What? those are very hard. The gingerly one can use. The first thing is one has to be honestly open to both possibilities. Even if the world says they have a very, very different picture of creation, we think differently, the Torah is differently, we have to give in. So a person has to make sure that he's not looking over his shoulder to see the Goyim are laughing at him and if it bothers him. If we look b'derech on the Ruach of Chazal, it's something which You'll see Chazal will certain parshas Chazal will give it all sorts of explanations, but in certain parshas they don't seem like that. In my Sebrachus, it we show them say maybe 1 in 1,000 understands what it's talking about. So the truth be said, we are a little stuck. It's hard to give definitive answers of where be right, where be wrong. It's just an attitude where somebody is cleaning, like somebody is taking everything and just making it one big metaphor, and it's affected an awful lot too much about what everybody else thinks. That's, I guess, when people feel that way. But it is hard. One would be hard pressed to find objective criteria. Okay.